new tariffs for 90 days while trade talks continue. White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow tells Fox News the agreement was not meant to be lengthy.
This is a question of commitments, which is very, very important. It's a question of topics. This is much bigger and much broader than anything we've ever talked about.
Kudlow on how this will help our economy.
It covers a wide variety of areas, including the technology, including tariffs, including purchases of various commodities, agriculture and industrial.
Check us out on Facebook at USA Radio. This is USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
Remembrances across the country continue to pour in for George H.W. Bush. Country music legend Lee Greenwood joins Fox News and shares the last time he was with our 41st president.
My wife and I, Kim, had the chance to visit with him at Kennebunkport. We had some business that took us kind of east. You don't just fall into Maine. You have to go there. And so they allowed us in the compound. Had a moment to sit at the piano and play him a song or two. And I did actually play a little version of God Bless USA, and he would sing along with me, as I know he's done with other people, particularly just before his death. And it was a very warm agenda. They called all the Secret Service people in to sit behind us and kind of listen as well. He was generally interested to talk to me and just kind of relive some of the moments we'd had in the past.
A former First Lady's book is flying off the shelves. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports.
Michelle Obama's Becoming is selling at a pace rarely seen for a political memoir or any nonfiction book. Combined hardcover, ebook, and audio sales in the U.S. and Canada topping 2 million copies in the first 15 days, according to Crown Publishing. It sold 725,000 copies on its first day alone. And the book is also taking off overseas, topping bestseller lists all across Europe.
Urban Meyer will be retiring after coaching the Ohio State Buckeyes in the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day. No reason was given as to why Meyer is stepping down. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This program is brought to you by Joe Peters at Coldwell Banker, certified USAA Real Estate Rewards Network agent. If you are a spouse or a USAA member, you can get a reward of between $350 and $6,000 when you buy or sell your next home. This also applies to the children and grandchildren of current USAA members. Call Joe Peters at Coldwell Banker to learn more. He can be reached at 908-238-0118. That's 908-238-0118.
Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! Hey, it's December already. Where did summer go? Hey, we're talking World War II today. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us. And happy Hanukkah to our Jewish brothers and sisters. Joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is co-host Air Force vet Josh Lang. What's going on, Josh?
I'm grateful every day to wake up under the red, white, and blue, Colonel. It does seem eerily quiet, though, this weekend. Must be the calm before the Army-Navy football game storm next weekend. Here's hoping for good weather, a great game, and for all the players to stay safe and show good sportsmanship.
Hoo-ah, Josh! We'll hear from Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby as he shares some warrant wisdom. And Marine Vet Skip Coriel here looks well-fed. What's up, Skip?
Well, I got three deer this year.
Okay.
I got one with my crossbow, one with my shotgun, and one piece of roadkill.
Hey, a kill's a kill.
That's right. It's all meat. It was fresh and like manna from heaven.
Well, here's what we have for you today. On News and Comment by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss President Lincoln's Gettysburg Address and suggest that today we follow the advice he gave us in it. We lost a major battle in World War II, the Battle of Arnhem. Author Anthony Beaver has really researched this event and has come up with some interesting insights. Then I'll shoot the bull with an Army vet and college student, George Hiller, and we'll meet Marine vet David Gerfen. He runs United American Patriots, helping combat vets wrongfully accused of war crimes.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
You know, on each show, we are now honoring a deceased military person. Not the superstars, but the average soldier, sailor, marine, airman, or coastie. They don't have to have served in combat, but they do have to have served honorably. Active duty, guard, or reserve. Here's how to nominate someone. Send me about 250 words summarizing his or her service that I'll read on the show. I've got some names, but I need a lot more. We'll include them on our e-newsletter, too. Send them to me, denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. We welcome your input to the show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. Now it's time for News and Comment by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. First, the news. What's first, Josh?
Faced with a shortage of some 2,000 pilots, the Air Force Academy is trying to churn out more pilot candidates. Over 530 Air Force Academy cadets from the 2019 graduating class have been selected to attend pilot training. Academy officials say that's a 26% increase over last year's graduating class. In 2018, 417 graduates were scheduled to attend pilot training. In looking to expand the pipeline to pilot training, the Academy is working with Air Education and Training Command to produce more candidates capable of bypassing initial flight training, a less specialized form of pilot training that gauges aptitude for flight and introduces the rigors of military aviation and training. Efforts are also being made to push candidates through a condensed undergraduate pilot training, or UPT, to further reduce the time needed for getting new pilots into specific airframes. And the Academy is planning to add flight-related courses to the sophomore and senior year to help advance pilot training candidates. Cadets already can take a variety of aviation courses, such as piloting a sailplane and flying a single-prop aircraft. The Air Force has about 21,000 pilots, but even with an annual influx of newly trained pilots, the service still needs about 2,000 to replace those who are leaving, some for the more lucrative commercial airlines, where there is also a pilot shortage.
It's true that all our military services and commercial flight organizations are short pilots. I'm glad the Air Force Academy is doing what they can do to provide more pilots. I guess I'd always thought that most people who attended the Air Force Academy wanted to fly. Well, one message is clear, that for young people looking for a fun and well-paying career in our country today, flying's a great option.
Defense Secretary Mattis said that active duty troops deployed to the border can now help protect any Customs and Border Patrol agents who come under attack, but will remain unarmed under new authorities he's been granted by the White House. Mattis told reporters, "I now have authority to do more." With the 5,800 active duty troops sent to Texas, Arizona, and New Mexico last month, but stressed that he will decide how that authority is used. Mattis said the troops will not be doing law enforcement, and we do not have arrest authority. The new authority could apply to a situation in which a CBP agent comes under attack by a migrant. Unarmed U.S. troops could come to the aid of the agent and take the migrant to the next available Border Patrol agent for arrest. The new authorities, granted in a memo from the White House Chief of Staff John Kelly, do not include any references to the use of lethal force. And Mattis says there have been no calls for any lethal force from the Department of Homeland Security. Military police among the active duty troops at the border also could be used for crowd control. They would also be unarmed, but would likely carry shields and batons to assist CBP, quote, if we had to back them up, end quote. President Trump has repeatedly warned that migrant asylum seekers surging to the border amount to an invasion, and he has said their ranks could be infiltrated by potential terrorists and MS-13 gang members. At least one MS-13 gang member was apprehended last weekend when CBP agents working the El Centro sector crossed paths with the man east of the Calexico port of entry in California on Saturday around 6 p.m.
I'm glad our troops are at the border. We cannot tolerate an invasion by anyone, particularly not people who fully intend to violate our laws. I fear that Secretary Mattis will not allow our military personnel to protect our nation's borders, and it's not because the president has placed any restrictions. This could be a bad situation.
USS Antietam sailors' advancement exams that had gone missing while en route to a Florida grading center were found in western Tokyo. Captain George Kessler, the guided missile cruiser's commander, said that Navy Fleet Mail Center Yokohama sent sailors to Yokota Air Base to search for the missing packages of completed exams. Kessler first told sailors the exams had gone missing in the mail on the way to Naval Education Training Professional Development Center in Florida for processing. They had been received at the post office in South Korea and were tracked on a flight from Osan Air Base to Yokota. That's where sailors ultimately found the packages. They were then given to the Fleet Mail Center's mail clerks to be sent by express mail to Florida. The Navy Advancement Exam is made up of 175 questions, 150 of which relate to the exam taker's rating, and another 25 regarding professional military knowledge. Kessler said that if the tests had not been found, sailors would have had to take another advancement exam in the spring.
Wow, lost documents and Florida again. At least they didn't find more ballots from Florida's election, but it wouldn't have surprised me if they did. Anyway, it's good the Navy has those exams, and it's good they followed up and took care of the sailors.
One in five Army generals could not deploy in 2016 for medical reasons, according to data obtained by USA Today. A troubling finding regarding the military's readiness to fight that Defense Secretary Mattis has vowed to fix. Overdue medical and dental exams were the primary reason for what the Army refers to as medical readiness in 2016. The medical readiness rate for generals has improved to nearly 85%, according to General Omar Jones, the Army's top spokesman. Almost all generals, 97.4%, can now deploy after taking care of minor issues, such as having updated blood tests and dental exams. General Jones said, quote, "The Army's top priority is readiness, and soldiers are expected to be worldwide deployable to ensure our Army is ready to fight today and in the future." The data from 2016 does not reflect recent improvements in medical readiness for the Army as a whole, and for the General Officer Corps specifically, end quote.
Secretary Mattis's perspective that we don't need troops who can't deploy is right on, and it certainly applies to generals too. I'm concerned about the quality of some of our military generals and admirals. And that's the news. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel, and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk about the World War II Battle of Arnhem that we lost. Author Anthony Beaver has some interesting insights as a result of some serious research. At East Troops, take a break. As a leading distributor of grocery products to U.S. commissaries around the world, Spartan Nash is proud to work with DECA to provide Freedom's Choice and home-based products to our commissary patrons around the world.
These brands allow our military service members, veterans, and their families to stretch their commissary benefit, offering you quality you expect and the savings you deserve.
Through Freedom's Choice and Home Base, we're serving our best.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correa with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. Neighborhood Community Watch was established by the National Sheriff's Association back in 1972 in response to the rising crime of the 1960s. You can form your own neighborhood crime watch by logging into www.nnw.org. Above all else, get to know your neighbors and work together as a community. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
She's such a beautiful little puppy. I mean, we walk around the block and neighbors always say, her hair is so beautiful.
Healthy and shiny and glossy.
DinoVite.com.
Fatty acids, omega-3s, and omega-6s are great for healthy skin and soft, shiny coats.
I would really recommend people starting their puppies on Dynavite before they get into what I would call the misery index. Bad skin, bad ears, bad breath.
Because if they're getting all their vitamins, micronutrients, microbials from the beginning, then you're not going to run into the problems associated with the allergies.
Grass, pollen, dust, dirt, fleas, ticks, you name it,
and the itching and shedding down the road.
Our vitamins and enzymes replace the nutrients cooked out of most commercial dog foods.
Dynavite for life.
This is Ed Lukasiewicz.
And Cindy Lukasiewicz.
Inviting you and your pets to Dynavite.
859-428-1000.
DinoVite.com.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Honoring Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
This program is brought to you by Joe Peters at Coldwell Banker, certified USAA Real Estate Rewards Network agent.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. A Front Lines of Freedom salute to one of our show's sponsors, Honor and Remember. Our nation must never forget those who paid the ultimate sacrifice for our freedoms. This is the mission of Honor and Remember, a nonprofit based in Virginia with support from their national sponsor, Spartan Nash, the leading distributor to U.S. commissaries and fifth largest food distributor. Learn more about how you continue the mission at honorandremember.org. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. I want now to discuss President Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. Last month, November 19th, was the 150th anniversary of that wonderful talk. In it, among other things, he defines who we are as Americans, or at least who we should be. The Civil War was still going on in 1863. The Battle of Gettysburg, fought near the town of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, was a great win for the Union and was, in fact, a major turning point in the war. The local community wanted to celebrate this victory and had a very prominent and popular speaker scheduled. As an afterthought, they invited the president. The main speaker spoke for 2 hours and received much applause. Lincoln spoke for 2 minutes and received little. And, what a surprise, the media mocked President Lincoln's speech, regularly misquoting it. It was about 25 years later that the greatness of the speech was recognized. It is now noted as one of the most outstanding speeches ever given in our nation. Here are his words. I had to memorize these in high school, and I still know most of the speech by heart. 4 score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But, in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they here gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. End quote. Our forefathers did create a nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. No, we didn't treat all men equally, but it was a goal. We did fight a civil war on that topic and won. And we should honor and remember those who fought and defended our nation, and we do. That's why our nation celebrates Armed Forces Day in May and Memorial Day, and we just finished celebrating Veterans Day. Yes, we need to honor our veterans daily, and one of the best ways is to read and honor the Constitution that we vets all took an oath to defend. Lincoln concluded with, quote, "We are here highly resolved that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth in freedom, and that this nation of the people, by the people, and for the people, shall not perish from the earth." We do indeed need a new birth of freedom, freedom from the hatred that we hear in a political talk. There is very little real exchanging of ideas in political speech these days. It's talking at, not with, the other person. A great example is how Justice Kavanaugh was treated in the U.S. Senate, guilty until proven innocent in some eyes. As I read comments by the media, according to some people, our current president has not done a single good thing. This because they refuse to see reality through their bias. And oh yes, there's bias on the other side too. So, let's be one nation under God again. Let's get rid of this phony separation of church and state interpretation that has people in public office afraid to live their faith openly. The only constitutional restriction, the only one, is that Congress cannot establish a national church in our nation. If we will decide to turn to God, as our founders did, perhaps our nation will not perish from the earth. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. We get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Hey, what do you have this week, Roland?
The U.S. Air Force Boeing VC-25A, better known as Air Force One, is in the process of getting replaced. The U.S. Air Force plans to replace its two Boeing 747-200 presidential aircraft, which were delivered in 1991, with two brand new 747-8s, which were originally built for the Russian carrier Trans-Aero. But before they could be delivered in 2015, the company filed for bankruptcy. The new aircraft are scheduled to begin flying in 2024 with a total cost of $3.9 billion. That's right. Two 747s. There's always been two identical Air Force One 747s, which of course are only called Air Force One when the president is on board. Air Force One is one of the most recognizable symbols of the presidency. Capable of refueling midair, Air Force One has unlimited range and can carry the president wherever he needs to travel. The onboard electronics are hardened to protect against an electromagnetic pulse, and Air Force One is equipped with advanced secure communication equipment, allowing the aircraft to function as a mobile command center in the event of an attack on the United States. Inside, the president and his travel companions enjoy 4,000 square feet of floor space on three levels, including an extensive suite for the president that features a large office, lavatory, and conference room. Air Force One also includes a medical suite that can function as an operating room, and a doctor is permanently on board. Earlier in September 2017, the U.S. Air Force awarded Boeing a $600 million contract to begin preliminary design work on the two new 747-8 aircraft. Modifications to the aircraft include adding a mission communication system, electrical power upgrades, a medical facility, executive interior, self-defense systems, and autonomous ground operations capability. I'm not sure what that really means. Anyway, the Presidential and Executive Airlift Directorate has about 300 employees located at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio and Tinker Air Force Base in Oklahoma, and it's responsible for the lifecycle management of the Air Force One aircraft. It also has responsibility for a number of other executive and special mission aircraft which are based on commercial airliners or small civilian aircraft. The executive director of the program, Major General Duke Richardson, said that many of the aircraft platforms have similar challenges and a shared mission set, so it makes sense to put them all under one single program. Their job is to ensure the capabilities on the platforms, especially communication systems, are common and modular so that the president or any other senior executive that flies on them is presented with a predictable and reliable experience. Now, I know Air Force One is very important, but these two 747s are only 27 years old. Do we really need two new 747s, especially when we're still flying B-52s that are over 60 years old and are not even planned for decommission until 2040? That's right, folks. That's a 90-year life cycle for the B-52. I don't know. Maybe we do need two new Air Force One aircraft. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, author Anthony Beaver will discuss the horrific World War II Battle of Arnhem, one that we lost. Then we'll discuss immigration with attorney Lee Marvin. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You are standing tall with Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for crunchies. Let's do 50, then stand at ease.
Now is the time, and wherever you are is the place. The Citadel makes it easier to earn your degree by offering master's degrees, graduate certificates, and undergraduate degree completion programs that are entirely online. These programs are convenient for working professionals and those serving in the U.S. military, continuing the Citadel's legacy of academic excellence. Classes are held to the same high standards that consistently name the Citadel the number one master's-granting public college in the South. The Citadel. Online. On your time. Visit citadel.edu/online.
LuLaRoe is comfortable, affordable fashion for women, men, and kids. Sold by tens of thousands of small business owners across the U.S., including many military families. Founded by entrepreneurs seeking a career that allows more freedom to be at home with their families, LuLaRoe is sold at in-home pop-up parties and on social media VIP pages. Check out a sampling of the unique prints and patterns in dresses, tops, leggings, and skirts at LuLaRoe.com and follow on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest.
USA Radio News.
Mourners are filing past the flag-draped casket of former President George H.W. Bush at the U.S. Capitol. The nation's 41st president is lying in state in the Capitol Rotunda. Former deputy assistant to the president, Brad Blakeman, was on Fox News talking about what's next.
We'll spend all day today and all night having the public come by and pay their respects. Then tomorrow he will go to the cathedral for the National Memorial Service and then off to Andrews Air Force Base for the final farewell to Washington, then to Houston.
CIA Director Gina Haspel is briefing four senators about the murder of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. The classified briefing came a week after senators complained that Haspel was not present when Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Defense Secretary James Mattis gave a closed briefing last week. The National Hockey League is coming to Seattle. An expansion team was awarded to the city. This is USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you.
We'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
This program is brought to you by Joe Peters at Coldwell Banker, certified USAA Real Estate Rewards Network agent.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Troops, welcome back to the nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. Now it's time to meet author Anthony Beaver. We discussed World War I last month. What we now call Veterans Day was originally Armistice Day, the day that fighting stopped in World War I. And you may recollect that World War I was also called the War to End Wars. Well, it didn't work. Less than 20 years later, World War II began. And perhaps the boldest move in the European theater, in my opinion, was Operation Market Garden, and the key battle was the Battle of Arnhem, a battle that we lost. Anthony has written a very insightful, well-researched book on the hows and whys of that battle, and I've invited him to share that with us. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom, Anthony.
Thank you very much, Denny.
Anthony, start by giving us a bit of your background. One doesn't just wake up one morning and decide to totally research a battle fought 75 years ago. Talk to us about your background and how you came to want to write this book.
Well, I was a regular officer. I did Sandhurst, which is a two-year course like West Point. And then I was with an armored regiment in Germany. And after the regiment returned to England, at one particular point, we all had to go off and do amalgamation of two regiments. We had to go off, senior subalterns, lieutenants, had to go off elsewhere. I volunteered for the parachute squadron of the Royal Armored Corps. But instead, in typical army fashion, they sent me off to a terrible, boring place in North Wales. And actually, that was the best thing that ever happened to me because it was so boring that I decided to write. And my mother's side of the family had all been writers. And I started off by writing a novel. But then later on, publishers said, well, it's ridiculous with your military background, the fact you studied military history under John Keegan at Sandhurst and so forth. Why didn't you write military history? And as I'd always loved military history, that was how it started. And so I did a number of books. In fact, I've been working, I suppose, on the subject for well over 30 years now. And Stalingrad, Berlin, and so forth. And I'd always wanted to write a book about Operation Market Garden because I'd always been irritated, frankly, by earlier versions, the British versions, which always tried to imply that if only this had gone right or that had gone right, then it would have all been a fantastic success and the war would have ended earlier. That I just knew instinctively was not the case. It was just very, very badly planned. And so that was why the research in all the different archives, I mean, in Operation Market Garden, you had the British and the Americans, you also had the Poles, and of course you had the Germans and the Dutch who were occupied and had been occupied since 1940. So I was very intrigued in all of the material in the different archives, and they really did reemphasize rather what I had suspected, which was that this operation should never have been launched. I think what happened really was that in that final part of August and early September 1944, after the fighting in Normandy and the fairly dramatic German withdrawal, the retreat right across northern France to through Belgium and back into Holland, the British and the Americans thought that the war was about to end, that the German army was in a state of disintegration. And they'd been encouraged by the 20th of July plot against Hitler, the attempt to blow him up in his Luftschanze headquarters in East Prussia. And they assumed, therefore, that this must be the end of the German army. But, of course, they got it wrong, and they didn't listen to intelligence from the Dutch underground, from the Dutch resistance. They didn't listen to some of the warnings that, in fact, the Germans were starting to get their act together and the way that they were able to recover rapidly from disaster. And this, I think, was one of those sort of fatal intelligence failures which the Allies made in the Second World War.
Well, there's certainly no shortage of those. It's easy to sit back and criticize, but I'm sure they did the best they could. What surprised me about Operation Market Garden is that Field Marshal Montgomery came up with the idea, because his history was that he was hyper-cautious. Isn't that an interesting aspect that he came up with it?
Well, indeed, you're quite right. It was totally out of character. In fact, General Bradley at one point actually said, you know, if Montgomery, a well-known teetotaler, had come staggering into my headquarters completely drunk, I would have been less surprised than Montgomery coming up with a plan for Operation Market Garden. I think the reason for it was, A, complacency, the belief that the Germans were more or less defeated, but also ambition and vanity, because Montgomery was still aching, it seems, from what he felt was the pain of no longer being the ground forces commander. From the 1st of September, Eisenhower was now the supreme commander. That had always been the plan. But the British press tried to encourage the idea that somehow Montgomery had been insulted by no longer being the ground forces commander on the continent. And Montgomery, therefore, was looking at any opportunity to, if you like, take a run at the Rhine, get across the Rhine before the Americans, because he felt that that would force Eisenhower to give him the bulk of the supplies and presumably also the support of American formations. And so that would put him back in pole position again.
So the whole idea of Market Garden was this, and the Battle of Arnhem was just, I guess you could say, turned out to be the key battle, right?
Yes. I think it probably always was going to be the key battle, because that was the big Rhine bridge which needed to be crossed. Without that bridge, it wasn't going to work. And it was interesting the way that Montgomery, I think, decided, probably rightly, that it should be American airborne divisions on the road up to Arnhem. But Arnhem, which was the most dangerous one, was going to be a British airborne division. As General Beadle Smith, Ike's chief of staff, said afterwards, you know, it would have been an even greater disaster for Allied relations if it had been an American airborne division which had been chewed up at Arnhem rather than a British one. And I think that's absolutely true.
Well, I certainly agree with that. I've read that at one point. This is Colonel Danny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing the Battle of Arnhem with author Anthony Beaver. So you said at the beginning that the plan really was not realistic, in the sense that even if things had gone much better, it probably wouldn't have ended the war that much sooner.
I don't think so at all. In fact, when one looks at the different archives, especially, for example, at Carlisle, at the U.S. Army Military History Institute, and all the papers there, and of course the diaries of the 1st Allied Airborne Army, you see actually what happened. There was a major misunderstanding, which was, I think, to a large degree, the fault of General Browning. And let me explain how that came about. When Montgomery came up with this idea, there was an initial plan for the whole operation to be carried out just by the British 1st Airborne Division and the Polish Independent Parachute Brigade. And that became clear. It was simply too small a force. And so Montgomery was then pleased with the idea that if they bulked it out by adding the 101st Airborne and the 82nd Airborne, then everything would be fine. And he had a meeting with Eisenhower, who unfortunately had hurt his leg very badly and therefore was not really in the sort of key position which he should have been at that particular moment. He had a meeting with Eisenhower. He even had to climb onto Eisenhower's plane so as to talk to him. He basically gave the impression that he was going to launch this operation. Eisenhower didn't really ask any details at all. He had given Montgomery the command or the use of the 1st Allied Airborne Army with these different airborne divisions. And Montgomery was going to force his view of the plan on onto the Allied Airborne Army. Basically, he had been told by Eisenhower that he had to do all of the planning jointly with them. He'd also been told back in England by the War Office, by his superiors back in England, that any planning for an airborne operation had to be carried out jointly with the Air Force, because they were the people providing the aircraft. It was quite logical in that way. But Montgomery was convinced that the Air Force were, shall we say, lacking in guts. In fact, he even described the British Air Force commander, Lee Mallory, as a gutless bugger, typical Montgomery-type phrase, and he was not going to allow them to influence his plan. But this was the problem. When General Browning went back to England on the 10th of September with Montgomery's plan and announced what it was to the General Brereton and the other officers of the 1st Allied Airborne Army, they started to point out the problems, the flaws in it, because the days were now shorter. They wouldn't be able to get in more than one lift in the whole day, which actually meant that only a small proportion of the overall force would be landed on the first day.
And we're going to have to continue that. Troops, there's more to learn about this battle, and we're right in the middle of the planning of it. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do every day. Then take a break to stay in the area. We'll be right back. United American Patriots defends U.S. service members who are wrongfully accused of a crime in combat. This includes providing resources for legal representation during investigations, court-martials, the funding of experts, post-trial clemency and hearings, appeals, providing stipends during incarceration, funding family member travel, and facilitating reintegration into civilian society upon release from incarceration. Check UnitedPatriots.org.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help. Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite. Pick up two bottles of LicoChops, get the third bottle free. New improved LicoChops with omega-6, omega-3, vitamin E, and now six extra direct-fed microbials. Even better for the digestive tract and immune system. And dogs love it. Try LicoChops. Buy two, get one free. This is Henry Lukasiewicz for Dynavite.
DINOVITE.com.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
This program is brought to you by Joe Peters at Coldwell Banker, certified USAA Real Estate Rewards Network agent. If you are a spouse or a USAA member, you can get a reward of between $350 and $6,000 when you buy or sell your next home. This also applies to the children and grandchildren of current USAA members. Call Joe Peters at Coldwell Banker to learn more. He can be reached at 908-238-0118. That's 908-238-0118.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our discussion on the Battle of Arnhem with author Anthony Beaver. Anthony, you were in the middle of talking about how Montgomery's plan was being presented to the British leadership. continue that discussion, because that's really key to this whole battle and how things went on, isn't it?
Well, when General Browning told the American commanders, Air Force commanders, the 1st Allied Airborne Army back in England, what the plan was, they started to point out the problems. And Brigadier General Williams, who was in command of the Troop Carrier Command, indicated that things had changed since the original or the earlier operation had been discussed, and that now the distance was greater, the days were shorter, so they wouldn't be able to get in more than one lift in the day. All of these threw the whole idea in the air. And actually, Browning should have gone straight back to Montgomery and said, sorry, Field Marshal, we must rethink the whole thing. But he didn't, because he was afraid that he would actually lose command of the Airborne Corps. And this was going to be his only chance of actually commanding it in action in the Second World War. He'd been a brave officer in the First World War, but he hadn't, in fact, taken part in any of the fighting in the Second World War. So Browning decided to keep quiet and to carry on with the plan, even in a very reduced form. And this, I'm afraid, was the real flaw in the whole of Operation Market Garden.
So we did fly over there. We dropped in three airborne divisions. I'm guessing that's something in the neighborhood of 40 to 45,000 troops.
Yeah, exactly. 41,000, yes.
But everything didn't go as well as planned. Intelligence was a little wrong. Everything was a little wrong, and it added up to a disaster, didn't it?
Well, out of the 41,000 troops, you see, only 20,000 went in on the first day. And half of those had to be left behind to guard the landing zones and the drop zones. So that was one of the big problems straight away. With the British, even worse, the landing zones and drop zones were 8 miles from their chief objective, the bridge at Arnhem. And this gave the Germans the chance to start reacting rapidly, which is what they did. By a bad stroke of luck, there was an SS training battalion in the area, and they were enough just to slow the advance until the 9th SS Panzer Division Hohenstaufen was able to start setting up blocking lines to prevent them getting through to the bridge. And only one battalion sneaked through along the side of the River Rhine to get to the northern end of the bridge.
And the goal was to capture the bridge, not destroy it, but capture it, right?
That's right. And they could control it from the northern end, but they had no control over the southern end of the bridge. And that's where the German counterattacks came from. So there was bitter fighting at the bridge. The other lot, the main bulk of the 1st Airborne Division, was cut off from the bridge by this blocking line set up on the west side of the city of Arnhem. I mean, and that was it's a considerable city. It was 100,000 population at the time. And eventually they were ground down as more German forces arrived with Tiger tanks brought in by night on blitz transports from all over Germany. And soon these lightly armed paratroopers were facing a formidable foe, and they were gradually crushed. And that was the origin, really, of the whole disaster. And it was the Dutch population which really was going to suffer even more than the soldiers in the end.
That's true. The Dutch did help all kinds of ways, didn't they?
Oh, they did everything they could. I mean, it was actually, deeply impressive. Many of the American and British officers, particularly American officers, observed, if you like, how much more the Dutch helped than the French had helped, say, in Normandy. And the Dutch took tremendous risks in pulling the wounded into their houses to look after them, in doing everything they could to help. And, my goodness, the Germans took their revenge afterwards.
Yes, they did indeed. This is Colonel Danny Gilliman, Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing the Battle of Arnhem during World War II with author Anthony Beaver. There were some serious lessons that we should have learned from that. And the bravery of the soldiers on the ground was what we expected, right? It was the planning at the highest levels that did it.
It was the planning at the highest levels, but also there is, as you, Denny, would know yourself, there is also a problem in military culture that, you know, when senior officers realize that there is a problem with the plan, it's rather hard for them to object strenuously. And in this particular case, General Erker did what he was told. He carried out the planning for the 1st Airborne Division. But he then told Browning, he said, but, sir, I've done what I was told, but I must warn you that it's going to be a suicide operation. The other British airborne commander, General Gale, who'd been a very effective commander in Normandy, he tried to tell and warn Browning that this was going to be a disaster and you should do everything you could to stop it. But Browning said, you mustn't say a thing, it will only damage morale. So, as I say, there is a problem whereby it's very hard for senior officers when they know that enthusiasm and sort of courage is expected of them. They don't want to sound frightened or unenthusiastic. And so in many cases, they don't tend to speak out.
Yes, that is an awkward situation. Both of us have been officers, and we both know that situation. And ideally that we can object in private and be supportive in public. But that doesn't always work, does it?
It doesn't always work. You're quite right. It's what one has to do in the circumstances, but it doesn't always work.
So what are a couple of ideas that we, our listeners, want to take away from this about the Battle of Arnhem?
I think the main one, perhaps, is partly the intelligence idea that we've seen at Arnhem. We see later on in the Battle of the Bulge and the Ardennes the way that it is the old problem of confirmation bias, i.e. when officers have an idea that they see the operation ahead in a particular way, they are not prepared to listen to or really digest any criticism of a plan or any information which contradicts their own assumptions. We found this very much in many operations in the Second World War, but both Arnhem and Ardennes were key to that particular way. And also, really, what we've just been talking about, I mean, about this problem of how do you advise a senior commander that their plan is, shall we say, unworkable or dangerous. And I think it's obviously got to be done with the greatest of tact. And it's up to also the senior commander to listen to objections when they are honestly and logically put forward.
Indeed. And the best commanders, in my opinion, make it clear to their subordinates they want to hear those sorts of things, but a lot don't. Okay, your book is available. Believe me, folks, we've only touched the beginning of this battle, the Battle of Arnhem. Talk to us about your book. Where can listeners get copies?
Well, I just say to their usual bookshops, if necessary, they could get it online from Amazon or anybody else who's selling it online. But, you know, support your local bookshop, I always say.
A very good point. And if you care at all about military history, military tactics, World War II, this is a book you want to read and have in your library. Anthony, thank you so much for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your clear explanation of this important part of military history. I appreciate that, and I appreciate your military service to your country as I served mine. We're brothers.
Thank you very much indeed.
Here's our Stand Tall Troop report for this week. This is when we find an outstanding performance of duty, and we all get to honor this fine older troop. The NHL's Tampa Bay Lightning celebrated Military Appreciation Night last month, and one veteran in particular received thunderous applause from the crowd. Robert McClintock, a retired Army Air Corps lieutenant who turned 100 years old the following week, joined the Lightning's regular anthem singer for a stirring rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner before the team's game at Amelia Arena in Tampa, Florida, against the New York Islanders. Afterward, the Lightning posted a video of the performance on the team's Twitter page. Retired U.S. Air Force Technical Sergeant Sonia Brierson and Lieutenant Robert McClintock of the U.S. Army Air Corps performed the national anthem at Military Appreciation Night to start the Lightning and New York Islanders matchup. The Lightning's regular singer, Sonia Brierson Kirksey, also posted a photo of herself with McClintock, calling the veteran my favorite star of the night. Brierson Kirksey herself is a retired member of the U.S. Air Force. So, stand tall, Lieutenant Robert McClintock. Front Lines of Freedom and all of our nation's patriots salute you. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour discussing immigration with Attorney Lee Marvin. Then I'll shoot the bull with Army vet George Hillier. Next, we'll discuss how United American Patriots protect our soldiers who have been falsely charged with war crimes. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our Armed America Report. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's beautiful outside. Go out and run a couple of miles of wind sprints, then grab some protein and rehydrate with water, and finally put a big smile on your proud to be an American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.
Six days after landing in one of the world's most dangerous places, U.S. Marine Corporal Jake Schick's life changed forever.
Yeah, I was severely wounded in Iraq, conducted combat operations in the Sunni Triangle in 2004.
His Humvee hit a landmine. Within 2 days, he was back in the United States for the first of nearly 50 surgeries.
Once I got back here, my real battle started.
Jake lost a leg and sustained traumatic brain injury. He spent 18 months in hospitals with family right beside him.
You need your family. You need your support system. You know, you need people like Fisher House.
Fisher House. It's a home away from home for families of wounded warriors and veterans receiving treatment at no cost to families.
Just very thankful to Fisher House for what they did for my family that entire time and for the things they continue to do.
You can help by making Fisher House your charity of choice on your CFC pledge form.
Fisher House, they were always there, so that was cool.
The CFC, Fisher House, and you. Find out how you can make a difference at fisherhouse.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News.
Mourners are continuing to file past the flag-draped coffin of former President George H.W. Bush at the U.S. Capitol. Among those paying their respects, former Senator Bob Dole, who was helped to his feet so he could salute the casket of the late 41st president. Louisiana Republican Congressman Steve Scalise reflects on yesterday's touching ceremony.
To see the whole Bush family there and a whole family dedicated to public service and to remember the greatness of President George H.W. Bush and just the kind of gentle man that he was.
CIA Director Gina Haspel will discuss the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi with a small group of senators today. Republican Senator Rand Paul says he's being excluded from the discussion, but really needs to know the truth.
I've read in the media that the CIA has said with high confidence that the Crown Prince was involved with killing Khashoggi. I have not seen that intelligence.
That audio, courtesy of Fox News, and you're listening to USA Radio News.
When pros go to the Home Depot, they want to get what they need quickly and get back to the job. That's why pros count on the Home Depot's free in-store pickup. Online orders, ready in as little as 2 hours, to grab the moment they arrive. That saves time. Pro Extra members save even more, with exclusive offers and benefits. Time-saving free in-store pickup, extra benefits, and exclusive offers for Pro Extra members. Only at the Home Depot. More saving. More doing.
Indeed knows finding the right hire takes time away from your business.
Hiring a qualified data engineer felt like a second job.
More job seekers use Indeed than any other site, so there's no better place to find someone with the skills you're looking for.
I needed someone with a master's in computer science and database experience.
Plus, Indeed screener questions help you find your shortlist fast.
Now I'm back to having just one job.
See why more than 3 million companies worldwide use Indeed to hire. Post your job at Indeed.com/hire. Indeed, the world's number one job site. Source.com score total visits.
A steady stream of Georgia voters are turning out for the runoff election for governor-elect Republican Brian Kemp's old job. Polls close at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and among the big issues are allegations of voter suppression. Our own USA Radio Network's Robin Walensky had a chance to catch up with some Georgia voters.
I don't think there was suppression. Illegals should not vote. They're not American citizens. It's for the Americans. You know, you got to be legal. If they're legal, fine.
I think the black vote, you know, is very important, and we want to make sure all of our votes are counted because, you know, we play a vital role in the society and contributing to this country also.
The National Republican Congressional Committee suffered a major hack during the 2018 midterm elections. That's according to a new report out on Tuesday. The political group was the victim of a cyber intrusion by an unknown entity. And in a developing story, we're keeping an eye on the Dow as it is down over 600 points today. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Look, I know this isn't the first MyPillow spot you've heard, and if you don't have yours yet, what are you waiting for? MyPillow stays cool, keeps its shape all night long. You can toss it in your washer and dryer, and it's like new again. Made in the USA, comes with a 10-year warranty and a great money-back guarantee. If you don't love your MyPillow, you have till March 1st to return it. How about that? Go to MyPillow.com, click on the Buy One, Get One Free special. Use my code USA and get one free pillow when you buy one at regular price, plus shipping. That's MyPillow.com, click on the Buy One, Get One Free special. Enter promo code USA. That's promo code USA.
Stanford University is refusing to let Dinesh D'Souza speak on campus because a security fee is being paid by a donor. At least that's according to the conservative author and filmmaker and the student group that invited him to speak at the university. This sort of thing is becoming commonplace on college campuses.